Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Golden Hawk. I am your host tonight, and I'm feeling really good, actually. We got some sunshine on the East Coast today, and I got some beautiful time where I was lying on the ground. In fact, tonight I got home early from work, unlike last week, and I was outside looking up, and I mean, oh my God, the stars are just, you know, they're popping. I was talking with my guest tonight off air, and you know, I don't know if it's me in my awareness or if it's, you know, nature itself or what's happening, but everything is looking truly brilliant. I mean, the leaves and the coloring of all the foliage this year is just brilliant, and the stars are like, they're just like diamonds. Oh, you know what I'm getting in my head right now? It's the ayahuasca. She makes me, she gives me a clarity that I see through different eyes now. It is because of my experiences with that. Well, whatever the case, it's been a beautiful night, and I'm very excited about tonight's show. So let's all get comfortable, because we'll get right into the show, but we're going to bring in, you know, invite in our essence to join us tonight. Take a nice few deep breaths. And you can say this silently or out loud. I welcome in my essence. I invite my essence to join me fully in my physical being. And with every breath, know that there's no denying of this experience. Through the intent of inviting your essence in, your essence shows up. And just brings this expanded awareness and this genuine feeling that in this moment, everything is all right, right now. Right now, everything is okay. There's a divinity. Everything else is secondary. It's about being present. It's about focusing on our being. And our being is how we're breathing. Our being is about being present. Not worrying about the bills, not worrying about the 12,000 things we got to do for the rest of the week, but just being here right now, relaxed and calm. We're not waiting for anything. We're not wanting for anything. We're just observing. And the quickest way that I have found for myself to bring us to this really centered point of view is the breath, deep breathing. You know, I used to say, smokers at least take deep breaths when they inhale on their cigarettes. There's a lot of people, if you don't smoke, you know, they're not taking deep breaths. I mean, I'm telling you, a nice deep breath in through your nose. Feel your lungs expand. Let your belly go, ladies. Don't worry about holding in your belly and looking skinny. Let your belly pop. Breathe in the oxygen. Breathe in the expanded consciousness. And breathe in your essence, the part of you that is non-physical and genuinely aware of an expanded reality that you are very much a part of, even if you're not conscious of it. Oh, yeah. Okay. I got the tingles. So thank you, everybody, for doing that. And tonight we have a guest that I haven't had on for a while, and I'm excited because he's the king of synchronicity. I have termed him that. And he's written a book, The Key of Life, A Metaphysical Investigation, which really quite precisely not dictates, I'm losing my track of thoughts. It's a great book, and it talks about how the synchronicities worked in his life almost moment by moment, and it's documented. That's the word I'm looking for. And it's documented. It's a fabulous book. I've read it. We talked about that on last show, so we're going to talk about some new synchronicities. But please help me welcome to the show Randy Rogers. Yay!
Hey, thank you, Goldie. It's great to be back here, and I was enjoying your little breathing exercise. In fact, I was just doing that with I was doing a regression session down on my soundstage here earlier this afternoon, and I always start them off with it's all about the breathing and being in the moment and shutting everything else off and staying focused in the present. And Eckhart Tolle, of course, wrote about that in his book, The Power of Now, and how to, you know, stay focused in the present and everything else, all the other troubles fall away. So
they really
that.
Do, don't they? Yeah, it's like a natural organizing priority thing that if you're breathing, because I don't think the body can, you can feel fear when you're deep breathing, but you won't go into the panic that fear can trigger.
Right.
You know, in other words, I still might be afraid looking, you know, ready to jump out of an airplane. But if I'm breathing deeply, everything in the body is kind of in a relaxed state. So you have clarity to know, you know, what's coming at you, where you're going and all that wonderful stuff. Or even better, because I have found that there's really no place to be going. You know, everybody seems to be rushing to get nowhere lately.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's, everything's accelerating or appearing to accelerate anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, with our manipulating of time and, you know, everything here that we created on this plane that we exist on that isn't real, you know. I mean, time and distance and space and all those things that we think are real aren't real. And, you know, I dealt a lot with that this summer, and that being back east, I ended up I mean, we probably should back up a little bit and say what I've been doing since the book came out. And the book took off, and I've started doing all these talks and talking about the synchronicities in your life and how to examine these details and watch these things occur and make note of it, and it will change your life. You'll all of a sudden have this clarity of what's happening and not be so upset about the way things are changing and kind of go with that flow. And when I started talking about it, though, of course, anybody had read the book, or even when they find out that it's about past life regressions that I became involved in, they all want to run out and meet Lucy Postoloff, the Russian woman that I synchronistically found on my path as I was examining this story, as I was investigating it. And that's not feasible for most people to fly out to L.A. and spend $150 an hour doing past life regressions with acupuncture. But I wanted to be able to show them how to experience this, or let them at least experience it somehow when I was there. And I knew that the normal way everyone did it was with hypnosis, through hypnosis. So I went and sought out the best hypnotherapist I could find, which was Dick Sutphin. And he lives out here in Malibu, and he's been doing it since the 70s, and he's written 20-some books on the subject. And, you know, lo and behold, here, synchronicity of synchronicities, I called my publicist saying, I saw that he had a radio show, and said, can you get me on his radio show? She goes, oh, of course, I was his publicist. So here, my publicist happened to have been his publicist, who was all connected to, it was all just one big connection. And in, you know, no time at all, I was on Dick's show. And before that, when I hooked up with him on the Facebook, I saw that he was conducting a hypnosis training session down in Marina Del Rey, just right over the hill from my house. So I immediately signed on for this, and I went up to meet him, and we just had a great time. And then I spent this week training with him, and he trained and certified me as a hypnotherapist in past life regressions. And it was the coolest school I'd ever gone to in my life. And it's, the stories that have come out of there now have just, it's enough for another book. In fact, they're sitting here on my desk. There's a stack the size of a phone book here of regression sessions that I've done, and just the notes I've taken. And then, of course, I've got recordings of every one of them. So,
I would never want you to break confidence or anything, but can you share?
I can share, because I'm not going to use any names of who they were
and
where they were. So it's really just stories. And And you know me, my book is all about the truth, see, because I was this newsman that used to work for NBC Nightly News. I was a photojournalist with them. And I just, you know, 20 years in the news business, I have to have the actual facts, dates, times for it to be real. And my book is that way. Everything in it is real, every date, time, name in it. And so now I'm looking at this going, well, how am I going to do this if I tell these stories, you know, I obviously won't be able to use names of these people and some of them, and unless I get their permission.
Well, you have integrity. I mean, because I think what my show is really about, and what I think my listeners come to my show, it's really about just the documentation, so to speak, of the intelligence behind life.
Yeah.
That's what I try to share. Because it's not necessary, I mean, I'm not saying, I honor your documentation of these things, but I mean, God, Randy, I am talking thing. You know, I did ayahuasca recently. Believe me, there's no documenting where I've been. It's where I've been.
Right.
It's
personal to you, and you know it to be the truth in your own life.
And I know for a fact from my connection with Facebook, that's what the listeners are really interested. You know, because I think as we know it's happening, it's what you said. It's about opening up to, you know, when you see the numbers, understand that, you know, it's not just a coincidence that you've seen numbers.
Right.
You know, there is a message in
there.
It
all lines up. Everything is.
Yes.
I point this out to everyone on a daily basis when they doubt it. There is always something that happens. And then they're calling me up saying, it's happening to me now. And it's funny.
Yes.
I mean, I've had people review the book. And one of the first things they'll start to write about is their own beliefs. Well, he says it's a true story, but whether you believe it's like, well, I didn't say it is a true story. It isn't. That is my, you know, word and bond, and I didn't take these notes and journals for no reason, and I didn't create this. And whether you believe it or not is, immaterial to me. I just had to put
exactly
the truth out there. And most,
exactly.
And the funny thing is, why it resonates with everyone is they recognize it as the truth, is what I get in response back from these people. And the 99% of the people writing understand what the message was in here. And it's really examine your own life. Find the truth in your own life. Don't look to me for the answers. You can read my story, and it's a map for you to follow. Literally a simple layout of how it worked for me and really how it's working for you as well.
About trust, right? Don't you believe it's about enforcing trust in self?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You definitely have to trust yourself. You have to. Say that when I talk. When I do the regression sessions, which I'll talk about in a minute, one of the things I talk about before I do the regression session with the person is you have to trust yourself in the information you're giving. You can't doubt it. You can't examine it. You can't try to analyze it or judge it or any of those things. Just be a good reporter and tell me what you're seeing when I'm talking to you. And that's the best way to do these regression sessions. Shut off all your analyzing of things. And that's why it worked so well for me. That's why when Lucy stuck the needles in me and I started describing what was happening, it was because I had this training of 20 years as a newsman to just tell you what I was seeing, not try to judge it or ask why I was seeing it or what was going on.
Right.
And that's
observe
what's happened,
it and report it.
And that's what's happened to the news business now, and that's why I'm out of the news business, because it's not news anymore. It's analytical. They have analysts, they have this, they have that, they have people chopping it up and spoon feeding it to you and telling you the way you should think about it. And that's not what news was to me. News was pure, uncut, raw, and I liked that part of it. I liked the fact that it wasn't pretty, it wasn't, you know, didn't have a happy ending.
It was
just was
the
way
raw.
It was.
Right. It wasn't tainted by your personality. It was just here it is.
Right.
Yeah.
And that, you know, people have lost touch with that and everything else as we move along, but things are changing for a reason, and we'll all see in the next few years what's going on. This regression thing really has taken off. I mean, everybody wanted to do these regressions, so I got trained by Dick, and I started as soon as, I mean, this is how synchronicity works in my life. The first week that I get finished with the training, I get a call from a woman up in Vegas who runs a place up there called the Ganesha Center. And her name's Lee Poppin. It's a great center up in Vegas in spirituality. And you would not think Vegas would have something spiritual. It's the coolest place and the best vibes I've ever felt.
I was going to say, Randy, that's a huge vortex. What do you think?
No,
it
isn't.
Like that
this
comes
is
out
out
of,
on the outskirts.
I mean, of course spirituality's up there. That's what built Vegas.
I know. I never realized that. You know, you're just thinking, man, what is going to be up there? And then I get up there, and just the coolest people and the coolest events happen. But what happened was she called me to come up just to do a talk on the book. Well, as soon as she found out that I was certified in doing the regressions, she booked me in to do a workshop there, which is what I really like to do, because you can do a regression session with an entire group of people, let them all go under hypnosis, and all experience their own personal little story to come back and tell us about. It's not like a private session where I get to spend 2 hours with you and we're really winding our way through an actual one story of your life, trying to find out what it has a bearing on in your current life. But it does let you go back and see what this life was and come back and tell us about it. So the workshops are really a blast. And so I went up there and did those. And then, of course, everyone wants to do a private session then. So we got, you know, the next few days just locked up every 2 hours down and doing a. And the stories that came out of there are wild. Not only from there, I went from there across the country into this summer down into Albany and Baltimore and Virginia, and my publicist set up all these book tours and stops and all these private sessions, and the stories that came out are just blow you away, really cool stories about how our past lives affect our current life. And I don't know if you can share because
personal stories are the best.
I'm not going to use any names of who the person
except,
was.
But you don't have to. Everybody understands that. Right.
But I'll talk about one woman came in. I mean, here's a quick one.
Okay.
A woman came in that was really heavily overweight, really, really heavy on her weight, and she wanted to lose weight. And that's something you can use with hypnosis and put you know, somebody under and then give them suggestions on how they're going to change their eating habits and exercise. You know, that all is well and good, and you can do that with hypnosis, and it will work for a while, but then it's going to come back again. You're going to quit and go back. Same as with smoking. Unless you get to the root cause of why these things are happening, you're not going to fix the problem. And I realized this really early on with this first woman with that weight issue, because I thought, well, we'll go take her back in a past life, let her experience that, but then I'll give her some suggestions on changing her habits. But when we go back into the past life, she finds herself standing on a prairie. It's in the early 1800s. She's somewhere in, I guess it was mid to early 1800s. I'm trying to remember the date. But she said she was in Mexico. Now, remember, the U.S. was all Mexico, too, back then. And I was imagining, because I'm sitting there with her, and I'm locked into what she's seeing, and I'm thinking it's looking like around Texas to me, the description of the land. But she's standing on this prairie, and she's by herself, and I move her forward in her life. I said, well, let's move a little bit ahead to later in the day or where you're with somebody. And, bam, all of a sudden she's in this dirt-floored kitchen of this old, you know, prairie house, and no one around still. And I'm saying, well, where are your parents? Where is everyone? Oh, they're all dead. There was a massacre, and she was left alone as this 10-year-old girl on this prairie. She's the only one that survived this massacre.
Okay.
And so I said, I'm sitting thinking, wow, this is not going to turn out too well for her or something. But I thought, well, let's move her forward in her life to see how she survives this. And the next image she has, she starts telling me about being a prostitute on a border town in Mexico, on a frontier town in Mexico, doing, she's having a great time. She's describing the best time of her life. She's beautiful, thin, has a flower in her hair, just all these details about how she looked and these guys she's having a part, just drinking and partying. And I'm thinking this is going to turn out bad. And then, oh, no, she's just having a great time. And so I want to move her farther forward, and I want to take her to the day that she dies and ask her to move to that day. And all of a sudden she just starts telling me she's in black. Nothing, can't see anything. And I knew that for some reason she just was blocking this, because she should have gone to that day and described what happened on her last day of her life. So I took her from that point to higher self, up into where she could have access to her spirit guide. And this works this is probably the coolest thing about doing regressions, is that you get to go up and meet the spirit that's guiding you along in this life, because everyone has one out there. You can call it your guardian angel if you want. You can call it whatever you want. But there's that inner voice, those thoughts, those feelings that come into you that guide you along, that, you know, you're always wondering, where'd that come from, or why is that, you know, that's coming from a spirit guide. So I take her up there, and sure enough, her spirit guide shows up, identifies himself. His name's Paco, and he's an Indian, and he's her spirit guide. And so I ask Paco to take her by the hand and take her back and show her what happened on the last day of her life in that past life. Why was she not looking at that? And bam, she jumps back. All of a sudden, she just starts crying, telling us, describing how she's being murdered by one of her clients, as you know, she was a prostitute,
right?
And he's murdering, strangling her to death, and she dies.
Wow.
She sees herself die and then float back out into spirit. And so Paco takes her aside then on this other side and starts to tell her what is going on with her weight issues now. And basically what it is that she struggled to survive in that life, because she was left alone, and she did everything she could and kept herself looking beautiful, and she, you know, she had to prostitute herself to do it. But she was, and she was looking, she was this beautiful, beautiful woman. And in the end, what did that get her? She was killed. And she dragged that over into this life, that if she lets herself look beautiful, that she's going to die again. So every time she starts to lose the weight or anything, would attempt to try to do that, it immediately, her subconscious memories are telling her, don't do this, you're gonna die if you do.
Wow.
So, and you drag this with you and you hang on to it, and you don't even know you're doing it. You have
right.
no clue what your subconscious memories are doing to you on a daily basis. And this is everyone out there. If you have a fear of heights, or you're smoking, or this or that, or any kind of relationship issues, parts of that were dragged over from past lives. And so when she was under, we gave her suggestions of what she's going to do and how she's going to move forward from this point. And you know, it's going to take more than one session. You really have to go back and continue to look at other aspects and make sure there's other things that are working in her favor too here, that they're
indeed.
You know, there could be five more past lives that ended up like
that are pointing to this experience, exactly.
Experience, yeah, that she's been carrying this for a while. And but I'll tell you, every one of these people, after I've done this, have called me or written emails to me telling me how it's made a difference in their life. Once they've seen this past life pointed out to them, they let go of these issues. I have more to tell. I have more stories that it's just as stunning that went on, you know, as I went across the country talking with these people and that. I had another one that happened up there where the woman was wanting to look forward in her life, and she was divorced and she had a daughter, and they got along really great, and they did everything together, but she wanted to see what was coming. She's looking for that person in her life to show up. And so I took her forward. I took her into a past life. Then I got into a forward-looking mode with her, with her spirit guide, and got her to go out. And she described this entire scene around a lake and a boat and all these different little details of this man showing up. And she thought she might be in Europe, but she wasn't sure. And well, later on this summer, I get an email from her saying she can't wait till I come back up there. She wants to do some more sessions, because in July, all the events that happened in the regression session that she described in there happened to her this summer, exactly the way she described it, you know, 2 months earlier before it happened.
Wow.
So you can look forward and you can look back. You can look any direction you want once you go into this hypnosis or you get to this relaxed state. Because I tell everyone what it's like. I said it's stepping off the timeline. Literally, you're
exactly.
stepping off of the timeline that we're on. You and I are on the timeline right now, everyone. We're all, and then what you were talking about earlier, we're living in the moment. We only can move moment to moment forward. That's why what Eckhart Tolle says, you know, live in the power of now, and you
yep.
talk about, we all preach. That's why it works so well, because you can't do anything to change the future. You can't do anything to change the past. You can only move forward in the moment. You can stand here and plan and think all you want, and sure, you can make plans to go on your vacation or not, but if something else is going to come up that you shouldn't be there, it will move you off that path and onto the right path. So
right.
You really have to live in that moment. And
well, because also, I mean, the truth is, if you, there is nothing but now. I mean,
right.
We can talk about our past, but when our past was happening, it was happening now. Talking
right.
about it is still in the now. You're talking about the past and
yeah.
or the future. There really is nothing but the now.
Right.
I mean,
right. When you're on the timeline.
Yeah.
When you're on the timeline, when you're here, when you're on the other side, when you've passed over or died or you go to sleep at night, there is everything. Everything exists at once. And that's what I'm trying to explain to people, what this world looks like, where we're from and where we are right now and where we really reside, where our spirit really resides on this other dimension that we're immersed inside of. I said we're literally walking around inside of it. And it's the same as when you view your computer and you're downloading a movie and you download it and you hit play and that timeline, that cursor starts moving across and you're going, well, I saw the beginning. I want to jump to the end. And you move it over to there. And then you move the cursor back. Oh, I want to look at this part again. You have complete control of that timeline because you're outside of the timeline. You're not in the computer. You're not living in the moment of the computer. You're outside of it and you're controlling it. Well, that's what this other world is like. When you're on the other side of it, the minute I put you under hypnosis, you all of a sudden can look back to all the lives you've been and look forward to every thing that you can be or the events that are going to come down that are yet to come. And you're only going to see certain things. I mean, there's something about it that they're going to show you what you're allowed to see, and because you have to stay in character. You still have to play the role. I still have to play a role of Randy Rogers. You still have to play Golden Hawk. You have to stay in that character of it. But once you have this knowledge that you're really not the role you're playing, you can do great things in your life.
Agreed. Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
You know, Randy, you've come a long way.
Oh, wow. It's just, you wouldn't, yeah.
You're growing.
The,
oh, I can tell just from the way you're talking. I mean, and, you know, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Your lotus is definitely opened up, and these are all just symbols, but you were definitely, I mean, because I remember our interview, and you still had some newsman in you. And I'm not
right.
saying that you don't, but I can so feel your spirituality has deepened by everything you're saying, and that, you know, it's beautiful. I enjoy, I'm enjoying listening to you very much. So
well, thank
continue.
You. And the things I learned were all real true stories that went along the way.
I believe you totally.
I'm trying to remember when I talked to you. Was it before last December? It probably was, or... May have, or was it this
yeah.
year?
Yeah, you keep talking. I'll find it. I'll
because
get our exact
I was going to tell you a story. I mean, I don't know all the...
Please.
If I've told all the stories of the synchronicity that's happened in my life since then and some of the events that have happened, but the one story that I always like to talk about as far as synchronicity goes in my life was the... story about going to do the book signing at Mystic Journey, where and if I told you this story, you can stop me. But it was a story about going into the Mystic Journey, and an event had happened to me that day, and I was looking for this sign in my life, and nothing had shown up. And here it is, 8 o'clock in the evening, or 7 o'clock in the evening, and I'm setting up to do this. And it's the 23rd of December, which there's that number 23, which you read about in my
yeah.
book, and
yeah.
so much. And I knew something was supposed to happen. And it happened.
December 3rd, 2009, that's when you were on. Sorry, I didn't mean
okay,
to
Okay, right. So this story you'll like to hear because this happened
okay,
after
good.
That. And see,
okay,
I was
good.
Supposed to do a book signing, this book signing, several weeks before the 23rd, like right at the very beginning of December. But on that day, a flood happened in the store. It started pouring down rain that Saturday, and the bookstore calls me up and says, we're flooding at 4 in the afternoon. They said, we got to shut down, and we can't do it. And I immediately recognized it for what it was. I know that when things happen and change you, don't fight the change. Let it go.
Oh, yes.
I tell you, quit fighting it. There's a reason it just stopped in front of you and turned you. So go with the turn. Don't even get into the hassle of arguing with it. And so I said, fine, I'll call on Monday. And on Monday, they moved it to the 23rd of December. They said, we only have one day, the 23rd. And I said, perfect. I knew when they moved it to that number, I knew something was going to happen that day. Didn't know what, but I'm just, you know, living in the present.
You're
when
alert.
I get there,
yeah.
It will show up. So I walk into this show, into this talk, two women show up. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, here I am 2 days before Christmas, and I have all this stuff to do. But I don't care if it's one person. I'll sit there and talk to them. But the two women show up, and then one of the readers from the store came out. He had wanted to listen to me, and he disappeared. And next thing you know, he comes back with this guy in tow, this gray-haired guy who I had seen walking out of the door when I came in. And I didn't – he looked familiar, but I didn't really know him. And he comes up and he says, Randy, I went and chased this guy down the street. I just did a reading with him, and I thought he should hear about your book, and let me introduce him to you. And he says, Randy, this is George Lazenby. Well, I reach over and I'm shaking George Lazenby's hand, and I about fall over him. I'm so shaken by the fact that George Lazenby has shown up for my talk. And in a minute, I'm going to describe who he is so anybody out there listening knows. I said, George, I've come into this shop. I said, I was looking for this sign to show up in front of me, and you show up here. I said, this is like Jesus Christ showing up in front of me for you to be here today. And I said, the reason for that being is that I said, 40 years ago on this very night, I said, 40 years ago in 1969, I was a 16-year-old kid up on a stepladder in a snowstorm in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, changing the marquee on the State Theater to read, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, George Lazenby is James Bond. And I said, my favorite James Bond movie, and you were my favorite James Bond. I said, I know everyone likes Sean Connery, I know everyone likes that, but I liked you. I said, I like this story, I like the storyline. It just epitomized who James Bond was. I loved it. And I said, and why it was important to me right now is that it was the only James Bond movie where James Bond fell in love and got married. And I said, and he fell in love with Diana Riggs and got married. And no other James Bond movie did that happen, right? That he's always been this single guy with all the women around him. And I said,
the player.
I said, and why it's important to me right now is I said, less than an hour ago, I stopped at the jewelry store and bought an engagement ring for my girlfriend. I said, she's been hounding me for 10 years to get married. We've never gotten married. I don't want to. You know, I said, but I just decided I've been telling everyone else to let go. So I went and did this, you know. And I said, and now you show up. And I said, that's an incredible sign to show up here. And he says, well, he goes, Randy, I hate to break it to you, but you know my wife dies in that movie. And I said, well, I know. I said, and that's immaterial to me as well. I said, the fact that you're here is just all that I'm not trying to interpret the sign yet. And you may very well be right. And he said, and besides that, I'm going through a really nasty divorce of my own. And I said, and again, that may be what the sign is. Do not get married. Look at what happened, you know. I said, you may be right there. But whatever way it gets interpreted, the fact that you showed up here is just all that I needed right now. I said, it didn't let me down. The sign were there.
Right on.
So I said, now that I've got you here, I said, I want to use you when I do my talk tonight. I said, because it just slammed into me that you were the perfect person to use for people to understand who we are and what these roles are that we play in this life here. So I started my talk, and I said, when I say the name James Bond, I said, what comes to mind to you? I said, who is the character James Bond? And they all answered, you know, well, he's a British Secret Service agent, 007. He has a license to kill. He carries his gun. He has all these hot women around him and these gadgets. And he goes all over the world trying to, battle these archenemies of the British Empire and the whole country, and the whole world, as a matter of fact. You know, he's always trying to save the world from destruction. Mm-hmm. I said, that's the character of James Bond that is locked in stone in any James Bond movie you go to. You're going to see this character. I said, you'd be disappointed if you went to it and you didn't see him show up. I said, but let's talk about something else here. I said, how many people have played James Bond? And I said, let's go through that. And we started with, you know, Sean Connery and Roger Moore and Timothy Dalton, and Daniel Craig's playing him right now. And I said, and George, you've played him. I said, you've played James Bond. I said, but let me ask you one question right now. This is an important question, George. Are you James Bond? And he looked up at me and he said, oh, I'm not James Bond. He goes, I played him once. And I looked back at him and I said, well, I'm not Randy Rogers. I played him once. And all of you out there are not the person you think you are. You're playing the role once. And so, but in the same vein, look how many people have played the character of James Bond. And as wild as this sounds out there, other people are playing the character of Randy Rogers right now. And others, I'm talking about other spirits, and other spirits are still playing the role of Abraham Lincoln and George Washington and Cleopatra and you name it. Every character out there, every character who was ever developed and played on the timeline is still out there on the timeline and still being played, because everything exists at once. Remember, we're creating our time here, and we think this is in the past because we're on the timeline moving towards the future, and we're living in that moment. But the minute you step off it, all that's still laid out there, and you can dive into any one of them you want to play. And that's why you'll see 10 people write books saying that they were Cleopatra or Amelia Earhart,
exactly,
or whoever.
Exactly. Yes.
That's why, yes, you see it, because we've all experienced it. And even if you personally didn't play the role, spiritually play that role, you still have all the knowledge of the other spirits, because when you go over to the other side, we're all one being. We're all that centered universe of what you want to call God or whatever name you want to apply to it. That is us. We broke into all these parts to play these roles, to gain this spiritual growth, and then we jump back again, and we're back and forth, in and out of the, you know, in and out of the play. And every time we come back,
and
every time we come back, God gets bigger. We get bigger. We, as a whole, as a unit of one, you know, when we're all together. But it's the individual spiritual growth. We're trying to, on every level, and imagine the levels that are out there now. It's an infinite number of levels and spirits.
It is an
everyone
infinite
playing
number.
Yeah. If there is no number to attach to it, don't even try to think about it, because it's an infinite thing. And that's
well, right,
who we
once
are.
Once you get off the fourth dimension, it is literally, you know, that's why I sometimes laugh when I hear some of these channelers, whatever, talking about fifth, sixth, 230th dimension.
Yeah.
Because once you're out of linear time, remember, linear is what gives you numbers.
Yeah.
Once you're beyond linear, it is, like you said, it's just a sea of isness.
Yeah.
But it's
that linear, nonlinear thing, I really loved, because I was in the news business and had to edit, and we used to edit,
right,
with film,
timeline,
which was kind of nonlinear, because you could cut and move things around wherever you wanted. Then when tape came out, you had to edit linearly, and you were really restricted. You could only put down one thing and then the next thing after it. And once you did that, you couldn't go back in and move something in the middle of it, because there was no thing to move. It was on the tape, and you couldn't move it. So then when computer editing came along, it turned to this nonlinear thing. And you can just drop in anything, change it around, and it really has a lot of the same things at play in what we're doing with our life here.
It is the reflection of consciousness.
It is. Oh, definitely.
Technology
definitely.
Is the reflection. You know, it'll be just nice when we're starting to reflect consciousness from, you know, a healing, quote-unquote, point of view, as opposed to a warring point of view. But
well,
it's coming.
It's going to seem like all hell is unleashing on the way there, but it will only be a couple of years, and then it will start into a recovery mode. By 2012, will be the start of the new world.
Heaven on earth.
What's going to happen? That's where the change is going to take place. It's not going to be the end of the world. Well, in one aspect, it will be the end of the world, the end of the way we used to do things. But it's not going to destroy the world in the process. We are going to move past that and on to a new way of looking and doing things. It's not going to have the corporate greed and the corporate issues that plague everything that's going on here right now.
Well, all that is part of separation and unified. Being unified is when, you know, we'll want to share and we'll want to help each other, not because it's, you know, somebody's telling us from a moral standpoint it's what to do. It's because we'll recognize the other as self. You will actually be conscious that being is you, because outside of the linear time, that being really is you.
Oh, I know. I walk down the street, and you can look at a bum sitting on the side, or some rich person driving by in their Bentley, and I go, I'm connected to one as much as the other. Realize this feeling when you're going down, that we're all the same. And the bum is just somebody playing that character, and the rich guy is somebody playing that character. And
it's all experience. There's no judgment
range.
Value. Exactly.
And I tell people,
just an experience.
I tell people, don't judge people. I said, that's the first thing that we do wrong here is you want to judge people. I mean, right now I see everybody jumping on Charlie Sheen, you know, because of whatever he did in New York. And that's something that's going on with his character, some karma that he's balancing. Stay out of it. You know, we don't need to weigh in on this. He's got his own issues. He will work through them, and it will be fine. Let it go. It has nothing to do with you. And I'll tell you why that's important. I mean, everyone out there wants to judge you. And one of the stories I have is a story that is kind of close to me, and I won't use the names again, but it's a story that allows you to understand why you shouldn't judge anybody. And it happened with a friend of mine and his wife, and they to kind of make the story kind of shorten it up a bit, what happened was she went and had an affair with one of the guys she worked with, got pregnant, and they kept the baby. Her husband stayed with her, and they gave the baby up for adoption. The baby ended up with some, you know, pretty well off couple.
Okay.
And what happened is everyone, all our friends, everyone wants to weigh in. Oh, you should have left her. She should have done this. She's this.
Right.
He's that. Everybody's weighing in. No one's understanding really what's gone on. I don't say anything. I'm trying to figure out, you know, wow, this is some wild karma going on here, and I don't know what it is, but I'm sure I could get to the bottom of this. And I didn't think much about it, but anyway, the guy was here at my stage, and we were doing a shoot one day, and I came up, at the end of it, I came upstairs to lock up, and his wife was up here, and she said, oh, you know, Randy, I read your book in 6 hours, and I really wanted to talk to you about, and she started, you know, get teary-eyed about it and said, you know, I want to know why I do the things I do. And she started to cry, and I said, well, no, don't even go there. I said, don't start to cry. Don't get upset. I said, because I want to tell you something. I knew, you know, what the story was going on with him. I said, you, your husband, the little girl you have, the baby that you had with this other guy, the guy that you had the affair with, and the two people that ended up with your baby, all of you wrote this script together, and you were playing the role out perfectly. I said, let me ask you this question. I said, if you had a baby with your husband, would you have given it up for adoption for that couple that didn't have one? Well, no, I wouldn't have done that. I said, but you did this way. And I said, that was a very selfless act. I know what's going on in your mind right now. Did I do the right thing? Is she in the right place? I said, that baby's exactly where it's supposed to be. I said, you've got to trust in that. I said, I know that. And she starts crying, you know, at that point. And
a good cry, right.
About
an
why. No, but she wanted, she said,
yes.
Well, she said, here's what's going to lock it down for you, though. She said, I knew something like that was happening. She's crying. She goes, when I went to their house the other night for dinner, and she had gotten over to this, you know, couple's house, and they didn't know these people, first of all. These were well-known people, you know, they're off, and they got their name drawn out of a five people that were put into a mix of, you get to pick one of these to have adopt your baby through an attorney. No names were thrown out. And then after they were picked, the couple that was getting the baby then allowed them to know who they were. That's up to that couple to do that. And when they did that, they became friends. They were there for the birth, everything that went on. My friend shot all the stuff too. So we go, and now they're at the house having dinner one night, and the woman brings out her wedding album and starts to show this friend of mine that had the baby for, showing her happiest day of her life and this big wedding they had down in on some island, and it spent, you know, lots and lots of money. And this friend of mine said, well, how did you get all that down there? Who handled this for you, this wedding? Oh, well, you know, XYZ Shipping Company. Well, XYZ Shipping Company is where she worked. And she's going, well, and she knew she hadn't handled the shipment, and she never met her before or any of this.
Right.
She said, well, who handled your shipment? Who do you think handled the shipment?
The husband.
The guy who she had the affair with. It wasn't her husband.
Oh, okay.
That's who worked at the company with. He handled the shipment for this. And as soon as she heard that name come back to her, she realized it's the father of the baby they gave. And, you know,
the connection was made.
Oh, yeah. I said, do you think that was a coincidence? I mean, the first thing out of your mouth is going to be, it's a coincidence. Well, it's not a coincidence. It was left there as a marker for you to feel at ease and feel good that the baby's where it's supposed to be. And what really locked it in. What really locked it in then was my friend was telling me, he said, you know, Randy, that baby just looks like it belongs with this couple because the guy that my wife had the affair with, he's Asian, and his wife is a white woman. And the woman who adopted the baby is Asian, and her husband's a white guy. And
wow.
You look at, and he said, it looks just like, I said, Dave, the baby does belong with him. It does belong there. You know, the baby does belong where it is. That baby wrote the script as much as you and everyone else here. And I said, and if we did a regression, I could figure out what's going on with this.
Exactly.
So I got back into town now recently, and we decided to go and try to see what, start to unravel this story further and understand exactly what's going on, how this can all come to play. Because I said, there's some karma playing out here. I don't know what it is, but you didn't do this by accident. I said, you had no choice. You had to do it. I said, everyone has a script embedded in them when they're born here, and you're playing the role to the hilt. You're not going to fail. You're going to play the script the way it's supposed to be played. And she goes back into a regression with me. And to make a long story short, she sees herself as this cab driver in New York. And she had this fare get out of the cab, shut the door. The fare's coat got caught in the cab, and she drags this woman down the street who is seven months pregnant or how long, but close to term.
Right.
Damn it. The woman gets so hurt, she ends up in the hospital giving birth to the baby, and the baby's born and dies.
Okay.
Right? This is really going to blow you away. This woman that she drags, and she's telling me this from the point of view of the cab driver. She's emotionally distraught under hypnosis, crying about what this feels like to have caused this injury to a person and the death of a newborn. So she comes into this life now with the karma that she has to feel what it's like to lose something close to her, and she has to give up a newborn to this couple. So she ends up having a baby that she will give away, you know, that will still pull at her, you know, that's her baby, but she had to give it to them, and because she created that karma for herself, that to balance what she did in that life, which was a total accident to begin with. Well, here's the wild thing. The woman that she dragged down the street and whose baby died, that was her grandmother in this life, her real grandmother in this life. This event happened to back in – and she's describing this in the 1950s.
What?
So this girl's born way after the 1950s. She's describing this event that occurred with her grandmother in 1959 in New York. And then after she gets out of the session, she's calling up relatives to ask them about this, to get locked down information. We had a name and everything. We're trying to figure out if we can get further into the story. But see, I really you have no idea out there how intertwined all your stories are. Everyone's life, I tell everyone, you're all the star of the movie. And whenever we interact with each other, we play supporting roles. I'm on your show, I'm supporting you right now, I'm playing a supporting role to you, but you know, whenever I'm doing something and somebody's helping me, they're playing a supporting role to me. But everyone's got their own little movie going on, their own script that they wrote, and it all interconnects with everyone else out there in more ways than you'll ever imagine. I mean, if you could put it all together, every part of this story ties together somehow with someone else and makes the whole play possible then.
That's wild.
Oh,
really, that's
wild. It's even going to get wilder because there's going to be more. I want to regress her husband. I want to see who else I can get regressed. I might not be able to get beyond that, but if anybody else wants to, I want to try to put an entire, because we all reincarnate together, I want to put together an entire soul family, so to speak. Because that's what they are. You're a soul family. You come in with all these other souls around you, and you play out these roles. And everyone that you're in touch with and close to and meet during that lifetime, there is a connection there. And when you see how these stories all interconnect, it's fascinating and a beautiful thing. I mean, you start to quit judging people. Now you see, now did you quit judging? I mean, immediately people would jump on, and especially people that want to have a religious bend to things. Well, she's this and she's that. She's none of those things. She did what she had to do here. And she brought a life into this world that had to be here for a reason. And it's an important life. It's going to have some other part of the story to play a little further down. So don't look at it as an affair and something that you have a choice.
See, the key is to recognize there's no choice.
Right.
But that there's divinity in the choice that appears to look not moral. There is divinity in that.
Well, in reality, the choice was made before you got here.
Pardon?
The choice was made before you got here. You made that choice before you got here. You picked the person, you picked your parents, you picked everyone around you. I know people will say, well, I would have never picked this. Yes, you did. And don't judge them, because you're here to learn something. Look at what's bouncing back in your face. The karma that's bouncing back at you is something you're here to learn.
Wow, Randy, that's hot. Just the way you describe that, if you're keeping up with me on Facebook, I really try to from my own life's point of view, to show people that when you get to what I call the hawk's perspective, which is you go higher up so you can see more,
right?
Everything takes on a new perspective. It is not when we're locked in the third dimension as the character and only the character only, pain is everything, because you believe that's your entire experience is the pain of something not going right, a relationship or a job or a foreclosure, any one of those things. But when you get to the hawk's point of view, when you expand in your awareness, you start seeing exactly like you said, even going back two stories, when the thing got canceled, you didn't immediately go into victim consciousness and say, what have I done wrong?
Everyone wants to immediately try to blame someone. You got to karma.
Blame,
I mean, we're talking about karma here, so there is no blame. You've got to eliminate a lot of words from your life to understand what karma is. And once you start to go down that path of understanding karma, everything becomes clear, and no blame, no judgment. Everything is something you created as a test of yourself. Everything. I don't care what happened to you. I don't care if you're a cerebral palsy victim. I know them personally. I mean, I have friends, an actress who is, she is one of the strongest spirits you can imagine. And they came into this life to play that role because they know that it will give them the greatest spiritual growth. And they're going to, and there's karma and balance and things going on. And the minute you find out, if you can identify what that karma is in this life and then let go of it, first of all, forgive. The first thing it involves is forgiving yourself. Quit judging yourself. We're the biggest judge we are is of ourselves. Remember, the woman came in from she was a cab driver. She judged herself for what happened in there and threw the karma onto herself here of, I have to do this to balance that. And I mean, I've had story after story after story of them come in. Just earth-shattering when you hear why you have these issues.
Hello?
I had a woman do one the other day.
Randy?
I'm here.
Okay, Randy, you're still here. This happened to me last week. I don't know what's going on, but let me see if I can unmute you. We can't hear you right now, Randy. So
you can't hear me?
I can.
Are you there?
It's Blog Talk Radio. Yeah, something's going on. You're good. We're good.
Okay.
I got you. Keep going.
You
keep
stayed
going.
There the whole time, but so
yeah,
so,
the same thing happened last week. So
yeah, we were.
I think it's the solar flares.
You know what? That's not far from the truth, because
I
just saw
I'm up on my stuff. I'm up.
Right, you're up on that. I just saw that and I thought, wow, well, that thing's heading this way. I wonder what's going to happen.
Well, and it does. It screws up electronics and stuff. So, but listen, you're on a roll. Go, my friend. Go, because I love your message. It's outstanding. I love it.
Well, I'm trying to get back to where now I kind of got lost there. I sidetracked off.
Okay, so, well, we're talking about, you were going into the karma is something that we put onto ourselves. And, I mean, everything you're saying, I'm in love with.
Yeah,
the
karma
is about self-imposed karma.
Yeah, I started to tell another story about a woman who was actually it was one of the women who came to hear me at the Mystic Journey. There, remember I said only two women showed up there. Now, you want to hear weird things happening in my life. I mean, not weird. This is just how to tune in your life, how to listen to those messages on
the other side. Tune in. Right on.
So what happened is this woman, these two women came in, and the one was tall, beautiful, just a very attractive woman, but she told me that she had a few medical things going on with her, and we didn't talk too much about it then, but she had I'm trying to remember exactly what was going on, but it was an autoimmune thing going on, disorder with her.
Okay.
And I didn't really stay in touch with them. They sent me an email back appreciating the talk and everything and listening to me, but then I didn't hear again from them since last January. Well,
okay.
I come back from Pennsylvania, and so all the listeners out there know what I was doing back there. After I did the book tour along the East Coast, I went back up to take care of my mom because she had had a heart attack early in the spring. Well, she went from bad to worse, in a really quick nutshell, found out she had stomach cancer. And, I mean, that was finally what we found out at the end. And I had to put her into hospice, and I spent the last 5 weeks with her in hospice, and it was beautiful. I mean, it was the coolest thing in my life, being with my mom as she passed away. Because I know people will get upset and say, I'm sorry. There's nothing to be sorry about. She's moving on to the next, to our next role. And she was so totally up for it. And I'll tell a little bit about that in the next bit of this. But I want to tell you what happened after I came back east from there. Or came back out west here, and I'm in L.A., and I'm in my office, and this is just like a week or so ago, and I'm getting this thought in my head that I've got to call this girl who I saw at the regression session that was there. I can clearly hear her name coming into my head, and I should call her up. And I'm feeling like it's coming from my mother. So I go, and I always listen to what's going on. So I went on the Internet, went through my emails clear back from January, found the email with the phone number, called and left a message for him and said, hey, this is, and I know that must seem weird. An author calling him up saying, hey, I'm just checking to see how you're doing and da-da-da-da-da. And I don't hear anything from him for a couple of days. And then I come into work on Friday, and here I get a phone call message on there, and it's from her girlfriend that was there with her. And she says, Randy, you got to call me. You won't believe what's happened. This is such a synchronicity, blah, 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 blah. So I call her up, and here's what happened. This girl, the girlfriend of the girl that I had coming into my thoughts, she was in a meditation like a week and a half ago. And in the meditation, this other girl's grandmother was coming through telling her, you should call Randy. He can help you. You've got to get hold of Randy. And she comes out of the session telling her friend, saying, I've had this session where they're telling me to contact somebody named Randy, and do we have a, and they weren't even thinking about me. Now, remember, they aren't thinking about an author that wrote a book 6 months ago. They're looking in their own personal friend database of people, and they're thinking, could it be this person or that person? Well, it wasn't. They couldn't figure out who Randy was.
Right.
And then out of nowhere, a message comes from me. Well, and they weren't even working at this place anymore. People from there had to call them. So no matter what, the message still made it through from the ether to there to over there, and they get this call saying, there's a guy named Randy trying to contact you. Well, she immediately recognized it to be the truth and calls me up and says, what's going on? I start to tell her, look, I've gone beyond just talking about the book. I learned how to do the hypnosis, the regressions. I'm doing sessions. I said, and she says, well, you're not going to believe what happened to her friend, the other girl. She's completely wheelchair-bound now and on prednisone, all messed up, and not doing well at all. And I said, bring her over. If you want to do it. And she was totally into doing this. And before she came over, she starts talking about this frequency number she had been seeing also, this number 528. And I didn't know what it was. I knew it was some kind of frequency for DNA repair. She said it had something to do with DNA. And unknown also to her was that along my path this summer, I had picked up this machine where it runs these different codes, and one of them in the machine was this code, number 41, that runs this frequency of 528 for DNA repair. And I had this in my possession. They had no knowledge of it, yet she's telling me that this is part of her solution to getting well. And I knew the other part of it because I had it in my hand here, So when she comes over, I do the regression with her to see, first of all, so we can stop the karma. First of all, start to balance the karma. And
stop
let the
madness, Randy.
Right, stop the madness of what's causing her to just to collapse into nothing. I mean, and when I saw her, oh, this is the other shocking thing. I would have never recognized her again. This tall woman who was just, you know, stunningly beautiful. She was crumpled, you know, crippled up, withered away to almost nothing in a wheelchair.
Eight months.
That fast.
Okay.
So I put her under hypnosis. Long story short, she went into a past life where she was in Scotland in the 1700s. She was a clansman, and she was a really powerful figure, led this clan, got in these battles with these other clans, saw herself particularly in battle killing this young boy, and saw the fear on his face, described it in detail, yet she didn't hesitate to kill him, right? Back then, that was her, you know, her character she was playing.
Right.
But when she comes, now when I take her forward, she sees her spirit guide. Their spirit guide takes her right back to that moment where she saw that boy and what the look in his eye, the fear that he had, the helplessness. And now she reincarnates in his life and has to bring on herself what the feels like to be helpless. Completely, nothing you do is going to save you type of feeling.
Wow.
And so here she is, brings this disease in, this autoimmune disease, that no matter which way she turns, there's nothing fixing her. She just disintegrates more and more and more. Well, once you have, the cool thing about karma is, once you know what it is, and once you let go of it, you forgive yourself for it, and you feel, now you know what you were here to learn, to feel both sides of the equation, the power and the weakness, you know, the weakness of what it's like to be on the other end of the power. You balanced it. The knowledge will, you know,
alchemize,
clear the karma.
Yes.
Knowledge will balance
transformation.
The karma.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
This is the lifetime of transformation too. It is. So indeed.
Right.
Indeed.
And so that started her. Now, so we went through the regression, went through all that. I set her up with the machine, have her on three different codes that she'll run, and we'll see what happens. You know, she'll come in, do some more sessions. Maybe we're going to, but at least she's letting go of that. She's let go of that. And these kind of, what you'll call a miracle later, will occur. It will just reverse itself. You'll quit being weak. You'll quit letting this thing hammer away at you because there's no point in it anymore. And once
she let that character go.
I played that role. I understood what that role was, and I've played this role now as far as I'm going to play it. I don't need to play it anymore. I can let go of my. I can forgive myself for what the role. It was just a role I was playing, and that's all these are. These are roles we're playing to understand these different emotions and these different things. And that's what gives us our spiritual growth. I mean, it all just circles around itself. It's an infinite circle of learning and growth.
You're on mute again. Wait. Keep talking, though, because I need
to
talk, so I know
I'm
when you come
I'm still talking
on.
Here, and I don't know if everyone else out there is hearing me.
I don't know what to do
with
this.
Oh, you're actually hearing a downloaded feed here? Yes. Hello.
All right, we still got 57 minutes.
There you
go.
Are you? Am I back?
Sorry about, you're back.
It is the strangest, whatever it is.
Right,
I don't know.
What kind of karma we got going here, Randy?
Yeah.
I need to hear. Well, it's all good. And if we go for a significant time, what I'll have you do is just hang up and call back in to reconnect. So,
well,
but we're good.
It seems
whatever
you're doing is coming back, or it just is doing it on its own. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
So. Some of the things that happened this summer, and people are always interested in this because everyone's interested in death and dying and what happens to you when you die. So this was
indeed
a perfect example or a perfect place or laboratory or whatever for me to really try to understand it with my own mom passing away in front of me.
Indeed.
I mean, my mom was so cool about all this. I mean, she's the one that pulled the plug on the whole thing, said, look, you know, I don't want to go and do these surgeries and be on a respirator and clinging to life. She's 80 years old. She would have been 81 on October 11th. So she literally died, you know, a few weeks before her 81st birthday. She died on September 17th. And but what
my
happened?
My mom died on September 17th.
Really? Wow.
Really?
Well, there you go.
Wow, Randy, that's pretty wild.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Wow.
So they're up there, you know, they're not even up there, they're around us, surrounding us. But what happened is those 5 weeks prior to that, I got her into a really great hospice back in our little hometown of Johnstown, Pennsylvania. It's a little town called Winbur, had this great place. And the week after I got her in there, she knew what I was doing. She knew I'd been on the radio. She'd heard me on the radio and on Coast to Coast and all these other shows talking about this. And
right.
But she had never done a regression session or anything. And I had my stuff with me and the music and everything I needed to do. And I said, Mom, would you like to try one? Oh, yeah, she wanted to do one. So
oh,
I said, well, that's cool. We can do this. And we were in a cool place. We were in this place was so spiritual and tuned in to what really everything is about, this hospice. They were,
okay.
The doctor totally was, you know, do whatever you want, you know. And
yeah.
So I put a sign on the door, shut the door, and I put my mother under hypnosis one day. This is like the second week she's in there, and I put her under hypnosis, and she goes completely under, really, really perfectly under hypnosis, and
right.
Starts to describe this past life back in Germany at the turn of the century. And she's describing herself being this young German boy, and my father in this life, you know, her husband in this life,
right.
He was her friend back then. They were two boys, though. And she's
okay.
Describing this scene where they're in this old car somewhere in Germany at the early 1900s driving along and getting some kind of accident, and she dies in this scene and floats out of it. So this whole German thing is going to have an effect later in the story if I tell you what happened as she got closer to dying. But anyway,
okay.
She describes this story, and then I took her to higher self. Because I wanted her, I told her I could take her to where she's going. She's going to get a chance to see what is waiting ahead
exactly.
of her.
Exactly. Randy,
well,
brilliant.
That was the coolest thing in the world. I mean, I've got this all recorded on a CD, too. I record everything I do, so I had all the audio in that. And my mom shows up there, and who shows up? My cousin, my cousin's son. I mean, these were young guys that died early
okay.
in life. I mean,
okay.
not just but the last few years ago. And they are the first two that show up to greet her. And then relative after relative after relative and friends showing up that had passed on. Everyone, my mom was in seventh heaven, just really literally, floating
aww.
There, talking about who was there and how they looked and how great it was. And I was letting her feel what it felt like. And she was just, having a great time. And then I had to bring her back. And when I brought her back into current day and back to, and when she came back out of the session, I said to her, I said, Mom, you know, I noticed, you know, I got everybody's name that you said there. I was writing them all down, and I've got it all on audio here. But I said, you notice who wasn't there? And she said, who? I said, do you notice Dad wasn't there? And I said, because I knew my dad would not show up. I knew that was going to be the case. And she said, yeah, I noticed. Yeah, he wasn't there. And I said, where do you think he was? And she said, well, he was probably out metal detecting. And I started laughing because that was what my dad liked to do. One of his hobbies was metal detecting. And I said, yeah, you know, you're probably right. He was out metal detecting. I said, but you know why he wasn't there? I said, he's waiting for the big day. I said, because when the big day comes, when you're really going over there to stay, I said, he's going to show up here. I said, you won't mistake it. I said, he'll be here to take you over there.
Right.
So we go through, you know, a long 5 weeks and, you know, it was, you know, she was doing pretty well. She had her pains, but we between me and my four brothers and sisters, other, you know, two brothers and two sisters, there's five of us, we're in and out of there. We were all keeping her happy and laughing and joking and telling all kinds of, sharing all kinds of great stories about her past. So it was really a cool time. But the last week before she died, I'm sitting in there with my sister, Rosemary, one day, and my mom is drifting in and out of consciousness. You know, she's getting closer to the end. And all of a sudden, she just starts talking in German. Just started going off in this whole spew of stuff in German. Now,
well,
understand this. Louise Rogers knew zero German. My mom knew no German in his life.
Right,
she
right,
did not
right.
speak German. She didn't read it. She didn't understand it. The closest thing to German in her life was my uncle's wife, Aunt Ingrid. He had gotten married to a German woman in the 60s, and this was her youngest brother. My mother's youngest brother got married to this woman over in Germany, and it was one of my mom's favorite sister-in-laws. My mom really liked my Aunt Ingrid. My Aunt Ingrid died years ago from cancer, and it was, you know, traumatic on the whole family. But she was one of the people who had showed up that day whenever I took my mom on the regression earlier, you know, weeks earlier. And now here's my mom spewing out this bunch of German. And my sister's looking at me going, is that German? I said, oh, yeah, that's German. I said, she was in a past life in German. I said, she's so close to passing now that the minute your mask is pulled away of who you're, the role you're playing, you have access to all these languages. Anything's going to come out of your mouth. I mean, because everything is available. Really, remember, you're this spirit. You have complete knowledge of everything. You're all your past lives, all these languages, all these things you've been and done. It's only when you come in to play the role that the mask is pulled over and everything's shut off. You can't remember that. You know, sometimes people have little slips of things come through and they don't understand why they're connected to this, but that's just part of it leaking into them. But here my mom is rambling away in some German. And this gets better yet because of what happened after she passed on. So,
okay.
So what happens is a week later, I was really cool about being there. I knew I would know when my mom was going to pass. I just knew I could be in L.A. I could be in Shanghai for all that matters. I would know when my mom would pass. So it wasn't really important for me to be spending the night up there overnight with her because I would go back to her house, just drive over to the house, and then I'd come up in the morning. Well, my sister and my brother were up there on the last night before she died, and that morning, on Friday morning of the 17th, I get a call at 10 till 6 in the morning. You better come up. Her breathing's changing. We think she's close. And so my other sister was there at the house with me. We drive up, and we get there, and I walk in the room, and I look at her, and sure enough, her breathing's changing. And I said, yeah, she's still a little ways away, but she's close, you know. And I walk out of the room. I mean, I stayed there with her for a little while, but my sisters and them were in there, and I thought, oh, you know, and what I do to be close to my mom was I went out in the lobby, and I pulled out this Sudoku puzzle that was in the newspaper, started doing it, because my mom loved to do Sudoku. So I felt close to her doing that. And I I could already feel her everywhere. I could feel her so far out of her body that she was hardly in it at all, and I could feel her out in the lot. I could just feel her wherever I was. And in fact, on the way up, the car lights inside her car were flashing off and on, and we didn't know what was causing this. And everybody's going, what's going on? There's nothing wrong with her car, and all of a sudden the lights are turning off and on their own. I said, it's mom. She's getting ready to go. Don't, you know, that's just her. So I'm sitting
she's
in the
letting
lobby
you know.
Doing this.
God,
my brother,
so awesome.
Jeff, who had spent the night with her, goes to leave. He comes through the lobby. He says, I'm going home and take a shower. And I'm looking at him like, you're leaving right now? I'm thinking, well, whatever. You know, I didn't say anything. He walks out the door, comes back, and he says, you know what? The lights are on inside your car, inside the car out there. And I said, well, I said, Jeff, that's mom. I can't do anything about it. She keeps turning them on. I turn them off, and they get turned on with the switch in the off position. The lights just turn themselves on.
Wow.
So he leaves, and all of a sudden I can feel my mom come into me saying, go out into the car. So I walk out of the place, and I go out, and I sit in my mom's car. And I pulled the keys out of my pocket. I didn't put them in the ignition. I held them in my hands there so that I could see that I wasn't pushing the button or anything. And the lights are on, and in the interior of the car, and I reach over, and the switch is off. But I turn the switch back on, and then I turn it off again, and the lights went off.
Okay.
And as soon as I pulled my hand away from the light switch, boom, the light switch goes on, the door lock started jumping up and down, and the door ajar light started dinging off and on. Now, there's no key in the car, nothing, and it's just freaking out like this. And I could feel it was my mom's energy swirling around me in her car. And I said, okay, let's try this again. I reach over, turn the switch on, turn it off, and all the lights go off. As soon as I pull back, boom, everything. It was like a Vegas casino. That's how fast and loud and rapid the sounds and the dinging and the doors going up and down. And I could feel my mom around, and I said, Mom, and I mean tears were streaming down my eyes. I'm going, Mom, just shut off the lights and keep them off. Because we were wanting her to let go, and she just was hanging there.
Exactly.
We didn't know why.
Right.
She wanted
right.
to go, too. She was all ready to go, but she just couldn't seem to.
Well, there's a depth of actually, remember, letting go is still, you know, it's letting go. I mean, it's a big step.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I said, just shut off the lights and let keep them off. That's what I said. And boom, at that point, when I said those words, I mean, I said it out loud to her. The lights in the car went off. The locks went down. Everything went completely still, and I felt her pass. I felt her leave. And I thought, and I stepped out of the car, and I looked. Everything was completely black. Shut the door. The light stayed off, and I bolted into the hospice, into the hospital, ran down the hall, and I'll never forget the scene when I opened the door. I flung open the door, and there were my two sisters holding my mom's hand, and they're looking up at me. They're going, "We were just going to come get you. We think she's passed." I said, oh, she passed. I said, "She just rang all the bells on the way out of here." I said, they're going, "Yeah, we were going to come get you." I said, "You didn't have to. Mom did." I said, I put my hand on her chest, and she had stopped breathing. And I said, good one, Mom." I said, I was really happy for her that she had moved over. And of course, then the tears started coming out from everybody being there. It was really emotional. But what really drove the whole scene, and it was like right out of Hollywood, was at that moment that she passed, they had a CD playing with music, really soft music playing for her in there. The song that came on exactly at the minute she died was the Amazing Grace, which is so much of a tearjerker. So, I mean, I'm hearing it playing. I'm looking at the scene, and it just is saturated in me. I'll never forget it in all my life. And I looked up at the clock, and I looked at my watch to confirm the time, and it was 8:06. And I said, "This happened a minute ago," because I knew it took me a minute to get down, in there. And I said, "She died at 8:05. I said, "You know why she died at 8:05? Because we lived at 508 all our life. 508 Binder Lane is our, and she was waiting for those numbers to line up, waiting for those numbers. And I knew the day she was going to die. The day was going to be that day, because numbers mean things too. And on that day, when you added up all the numbers of September 17th, 2010, it all adds up to that single number of 2. And I had pointed out to my brothers and sisters how this was prevalent in her life, in my dad's life. They had this number 2 around them. My dad was born on a date that totaled to a 2. He died on a date that totaled to that. My mom wasn't born on a date that totaled to 2, but all these other events in her life had 2s in them. They were married on the 22nd, double 2s on that day.
Right,
there were
right.
markers on it. And you know what's weird is when I went down the hall and I told, and she was born on an 11, on October the 11th. An 11 is a 2, a 1 and a 1 is a 2.
Indeed.
She had that prevalent. And what happened on that day was I walked down the hall and I went out of the room, got the nurse and told her, "Hey, my mom passed away at 8:05, They go in the room to do their own personal check and make sure she's gone and everything. But
right.
they marked the time of death at 8:11. And there's her 11. I said, she got the number both ways. She had her 508 or 8:05, whatever way you want to look at, where we lived. And in my book, I talk about this number 5 and 8 all the time and how it
yep.
was so dynamic in my life. The 5 being the 23 of Kathy's, brought down to a single digit of 5, and the 8 being my number that I was born on July the 8th, and this number 8 was always around.
Right.
And it impacted Kathy's life, and it impacted mine in different areas. And she, everything that happened with her was happening around the number 8 on individual days. She died on the 26th. She found out she had cancer on August 8th. And these things were all, or August 26th also, I think it was, she found out that final cancer she had was on an 8. So these numbers, you've got to know how to read them. You can't let them get to you, but you got to just kind of let it flow through you. And
really do exquisitely. You're a living example. I mean, what you just shared is one of the most conscious experiences.
Yeah.
I was definitely nowhere near as conscious when my mom died in 2000.
Uh-huh.
So when my father goes, I'll definitely have an easier experience of it because of my awareness now. I mean, my mother's death actually triggered me to say, okay, I need to find out about the afterlife because I got somebody there now
yeah.
that I couldn't let go of. It was like,
well, they're not gone though. They are there.
They're
they
not
are
gone.
Right there
Agreed.
With you right now, surrounding
Absolutely.
You and you have complete communication with them. I said, everybody, I know people want to say, "Oh, I'm sorry," and this, there's nothing to be sorry about. I said, I don't have to pick up the phone to call my mom anymore. I don't have to drive back to Pennsylvania to see her. She is instantly accessible. And I started to show my brothers and sisters how this happens and how you can talk with her and how she will respond and how you can understand the message coming from the other side. And that's where, I'll take you now on the rest of the story. What happened
okay.
after she passed on? So we get home, and it's like 2 days later on Sunday, my brother Tom, he wasn't in town, but he flew in. because he had just been with her and just left a week or two earlier, and she passed away, and then he came back so he could be here for that. We were going to have my mom wanted a memorial luncheon set up, and we set that up for that following Monday with all her quilting friends, and that was all in play and ready to go. And my brother came into town, though, and he was in on that Sunday. We were sitting at the house, and he's walking around looking at different things on a wall, and he saw this picture on the wall that was of a castle in Germany. And underneath it was all written in German, some kind of a note. And I know it came from my Aunt Ingrid to my mom, and it was something she had given her, and I didn't know what it said. And he's saying to me, "What's this say?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I don't speak German." I said, "Why don't you Google it? You know how they have the translator on it?"
Yep,
so he sets
yep.
it down, and he's standing there over my laptop, and he types in this whole paragraph, and it comes up as some kind of gobbledygook. It didn't make any sense. And I said, "Well, Tom, you know what? Sometimes these words are out of context." I said, "Let's do each individual word. We'll write down what the meaning is, and then we'll try to make sense of it that way." Mm-hmm. So I'm standing over, and I'm real quiet, and I'm letting it absorb in what he's doing. He types the first word in, it comes up with a word. And he types the second word in, it comes up with a word. And when he goes to do the third one, by then, I could feel my mother talking to me. And she just came right through me, and I said exactly what she said. I just said it out loud to my brother. And I reached over at the same time that this happened. I reached down and grabbed this little picture that was on the thing next to him. I said,
right.
"Well, if you turn it over, you idiots, you'll be able to read it in English on the back." And I flipped the picture over, and there in English on the back, in my mom's own handwriting, was a translation into English. My aunt had obviously told her what it said, and she wrote it all down. And my brother looks up at me, and he says, "Well, if you knew that, what did you have me doing?" And he starts yelling at me. I'm going, "Tom, did you hear what I said?
I didn't know that.
Didn't know that. I just told you what she said." And I said, she said, "If you turn it over, you idiots, you'll see." She was making a joke of us. You know, you two bumbleheads are standing there trying to interpret it, and it's written on the back. I wrote it on there. So I felt her, and that's how I knew it, to do that. Because otherwise she'd have hung it up on a wall and I'd never looked at the back of it because I wasn't thinking about it. But because she came through, so then later on he you know, still people are leery. Did that? How did you do that? What are you doing? You know. So 2 days later, on Monday we have the memorial luncheon. We come back, and later that afternoon my brother's again ripping through the house, looking, tearing things apart, and I'm sitting there going, what are you looking for? I had these lottery tickets that he had found some numbers that my mom had been asked us all what our favorite numbers were, and he thought he should play them for the lottery, that she had them down on his paper. And so he went out and bought lottery tickets with all these different numbers in different ways.
Right.
And he lost them. He's now lost them. He can't find them. And he's asked me, "Have I seen them?" I said, "No, Tom, I haven't seen your lottery tickets." But I'm sitting there really quiet, and he's back in the back, tearing through things, and all of a sudden I can hear my mom come into my head again, and I just yelled out exactly what she said. I said, "If you go in the closet and you look in the breast pocket of your sports coat, you'll find the tickets in there."
Wow.
And all of a sudden I don't hear a word. It's dead silence in the house. All I hear is the closet door slide open, and the next words I hear are my brother Tom saying to me, "Randy, are you talking to Mom again?" And I started laughing. I said, "Where do you think that came from, Tom?" I said, "Were they in there?" And he said, "Yeah." He goes, "How do you do that? How do you do that?" I said, "You just got to be quiet and let her thoughts flow into yours." And it happens time after time and time again with me, with her. And I can and she's nowhere. She's everywhere. I don't care if I'm here, there. You don't have to be there. This time and distance thing we created here, it's an illusion. You know, I mean, the fact that I got on a plane and flew back to Pennsylvania to be with her was all an illusion. I didn't really go anywhere. I created that whole trip, and we do it every day when we get in our cars. Where everything about us is an illusion here, and understanding that and letting this stuff start to flow through you, you can become very centered. You can become very much in tune with everything that's going on around you.
Randy, I am just absolutely digging the shit out of you right now. I'm allowed to swear. We're on cable.
Oh.
I mean, this is you. Trust me, you're not going to be. We're not waiting another year. I want you on more often, definitely, because this is.
Well, the stories,
your
you know,
energy,
you got to give
your
us
presence,
some time. And
you're brilliant. I love
the
this.
The stories
yes.
that come out, or what makes it. That's why I like telling these stories. I like telling the truth. I mean, and this can work for you. This communication with the other side can really work in your favor. And here's an example. A couple days later, I'm driving down from my mom's house in her car, driving into this little town of Conemaugh, and as I'm coming down the road, the speed limit changes in Conemaugh to 25. And if you're not going 25 and the cop's down there, you are going to get a ticket. They will nail you, and you will be, if they're there. And I'm flying down the road, and normally I always slow down. And I had the radio on, and I'm kind of feeling good because my mom's on the other side, and everything is just balanced, and a lot of the stress is gone from everything that we were dealing with, and with, you know, having to be gone up there every day and trying to, you know, help her through this. And I just felt this such a relief that I was kind of rocking out to this song. And the song that was on the radio was, "Driving that train high on cocaine, Casey Jones, you better watch your speed." And as soon as "Watch Your Speed" came on, that part of it, I had turned a corner, and I was literally a half a block away from entering that town. And I was at the speed limit where it said 25, and I wasn't. It blew right past me. And as soon as the "Watch Your Speed" part of it came on, I heard my mom's voice harmonize in with it, saying, "You better watch your speed." And I immediately, I'm like, oh, my God, I jammed on the brakes, got it down to 25, and slowed it into the town. And as I crawled into the town, I looked off to my right, and there was a cop hiding in the bushes with a gun. And nothing. It just went right by. And I'm like, thank you, Mom, you know. I mean, my mom told me that up ahead, that I was going to get a ticket if I didn't watch my speed. And I felt it, heard it, and that's how it works.
And acknowledged it, right.
Acknowledged
it.
Listen to the songs on the radio. Listen to be that Indian out there. Be what we used to be. We used to be able to walk through the forest, look at the birds and the trees and the leaves and the wind and the fish and every animal out there, and understand we could read them like a map and know what was going to happen. We were so tuned in to nature and everything around us. And then as we became, quote-unquote, civilized, we discarded all these messages and this stuff as just a bunch of crap, you know, that, this guy's crazy. It tells you that you look at these signs and that. It's not. There are more signs around us now than ever. The communication with the other side is more than you can ever imagine. You have more ways of getting
thin.
The information.
It's thin. It's very thin.
Yeah.
It is not,
it's on
the
bus
the veil
going
is actually
by you. It's on the car
right
plate, license plate in front of you. Could be a bumper sticker in front of you. Examine the details of your life. Listen to the person behind you in the grocery store line when they say something. You're going to see it reoccur later in the day. And don't try to overanalyze it. Understand it's just showing you you're on the right path. Or maybe make a turn here or turn there. Don't fight the turn. Don't fight when you can't do something. Look, go to the left. Go to the right. Do whatever it takes. But continue moving forward and let go of worrying about the changes that are happening in front of you.
Well, let go of control. It's not
control.
About control. It's
it
about
is.
Awareness and then following the cues. Just follow the cues.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Oh, it's so much about following those little, that it's such a map we laid out here. And it's fun to do. I mean, I literally do it every day of my life. I do it every day. I can't. You want to hear what wild one that just happened to me? And I know, I'm sure the guy probably thinks I'm crazy because he doesn't know me yet, but we will know each other at some point. And somehow this is going to be a story I'll tell about it. I came into work the other day, I went to leave work the other day, and when I went to leave, I went to lock up the gate in the back of my stage here, and when I got out of the car, I looked down to my left, and there was this small sparrow lying there dead on the ground, and it was lying there, it's so peaceful, and I looked at this thing, and I couldn't get my fixation off of it. I don't know why. I was drawn to it. I just kept staring at this bird, and I'm staring at it, I'm thinking, what does this have to do with anything? There's something important about this, but I, you know, kind of go on, lock the gate, go on home. And then next day I come into work, I go to unlock the gate. I happen to look down. There's that bird still there. Nothing, no cat, nothing took it. Normally something would have taken it. But I'm looking at it, and I'm fixated on this bird for some reason, and I can't let go of it. So I go into work, and I open up, I turn on my computer, turn on my emails, and I get an email from my girlfriend saying, you know, oh, here's a site that you should check out. I think this guy and you should look at this guy's site, and he probably has something that the two of us, because I was looking at ways of expanding my, having the stage here. I really want to go out and help other authors and other people by putting some kind of shows together on here that we broadcast out of here with. And she sent me a site of some guy that puts on these kind of events or promotes authors here locally in town. And I didn't ever heard of him, but the name of his company was called Rare Bird Lit, Rare Bird Literature. So I clicked on this rarebirdlit.com, and the first image that pops up is this bird lying dead on the ground. And as soon as I saw it, I recognized it for what it was. And I'm like, oh, my God, well, I guess I got to contact this guy. So I sent him a note and told him, you know, and at the end of it, I put a little note saying, you know, I wrote a book on synchronicity, and it's no accident that I'm contacting you, that these signs all pointed to me that, you know, I've got to meet you, and something's going to occur here. So my life is like that every day. So that's where it is out there now. And the funny thing was, just before we went on the show, this guy sent me a connection on Facebook. So we're that much closer now to actually, you know, communicating here in person. And
when you say that the guy's web page has an opening page of a dead bird?
Right. Yeah. If you go to Rare Bird.
That's really quite an interesting, you know.
Yeah, go to rarebirdlit.com, I think it is. And the first image you see.
All right, I am going to go there. Okay.
Yeah, the first image you'll see will be this.
Dead bird.
Yeah, a dead bird. It's.
All right, where was it? Rarebirdlit.com.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just that, you know, that's kind of an, you know, I don't know, dead things on a, oh my, there it is.
Isn't that wild? You see it?
I mean,
it says enter?
Randy, you can't make this stuff.
No,
you,
I can't make
live,
this stuff up. I'm telling you.
You are one of the most magical cats I have ever met in my life.
People want to think you're I said, there's no way.
I'm going to post it on Facebook if I can. Let's see if I can copy
it.
I mean, just so you know.
I'm sure this guy will appreciate it, too. I mean, he runs a company that that handles authors. And the funny thing is, it's just, I don't know what it is, but I'm telling you, when I know the connection, I know the connection. I don't miss it.
Yeah.
I don't miss a thing.
Even
when my mom was dying, she had a friend come in. That wasn't even really a friend to begin with. This woman was working for the hospice, and she came in and starts talking to my mom. And this is when my mom was all cognizant in the beginning of it. And they're talking, and they're thinking, this woman's thinking, well, I've known this woman. I know her somewhere. And my mom starts saying something about working in the being in the quilting guild. And all of a sudden, this woman, oh, I know you. You used to be my Avon lady. And here my mom, when she sold Avon years ago, was this woman's Avon lady. And she was one of her best customers, and she just didn't recognize her after all these years. And she wasn't a friend of hers, just a client, basically. And so now here she is visiting my mom in the hospital. Well, the minute she came in, I happened to be in there one day when she came in to visit again. And the minute I met her, there was some connection there. I felt this. I knew that something about this woman. Well, to make a long story short, after my mom passed on, she came out to my mom's house. I was going to give her something of my mom's to keep at her place that I wanted to save, a piece of furniture. And when she came out there and she saw this house, she said, you know, are you selling this? I might know somebody. Do you know this? The person that bought, we're going to close the house on Monday. The person that bought my mother's house is this friend of this woman. He came out
friend
and looked
of the
at the
Avon
house.
Lady.
Yeah, the friend of the Avon. No, not the Avon lady. She was the woman that bought the Avon from my mom. My mom was the Avon lady. This woman
client. Oh,
right.
Okay.
This woman, her friend, that's how everything's connected. When you start to let your life flow that way, it really has a very cool, calm, I mean, it just feels good to let everything.
Yeah, wouldn't you call it magical? I mean, I would call it even though I get that magic implies that there's illusion.
No, there's
meaning.
No magic involved. It's just allowing yourself to feel the vibration of what it's about being here and go with the flow. Don't fight it so much. You know, don't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not to say to roll over and let people beat you up all day. You know,
you're not getting beat up at all.
If you are getting beat up,
you're having a grand time of it all. This is not harmful at all.
Oh, no, but you do have to let go of certain things. I had to let go of the whole commercial aspect of, I mean, here I was working in Hollywood doing all these things with the movie stars and that. Yeah, you know, that was fun for 15 or 20 years. And sure, you make a lot of money and you do this stuff. But after a while, it has no value at all. You know, what's valuable is helping people out there. I really like going around doing these regressions with people, letting them see who they were, and understanding how it can help them to balance the karma in their life.
Yeah, that's just outstanding. You really are just I call you a magical cat just because you get it. Because for me, you know, I'm all about the imagination. Like, I follow your world, but I come from the mystical and the magical,
right.
Because that's just the elements that turn Goldie on. I mean, you know, shucks, I took on the name Golden Hawk. Clearly, I'm about the imagination, you know what I mean, and shape-shifting,
yeah.
And shamanism, and it's the same energy, it's just a different language,
right.
In the sense, you know, but it's the same, absolutely. We're working from the same intelligence.
Right. We're all on our own path,
you know?
But it's all leading in the same direction.
Exactly. Exactly.
And people so much, I think, out there right now have this doubt of whether they're on the right path or not. But more people I talk about as I go across the country, I can't tell you how many people tell me that you just aren't fulfilled in whatever they were doing, and they're letting go of it. And they're finding out the minute they let go of it that there's this big freeing release to them. And I know it's scary. They think you're going to lose your house or that. It's not going to happen.
Right.
You are going
to
get through it. You will be okay. Nothing. You've got to have this complete confidence that nothing is going to happen to you. You are indestructible, really. The spirit within you, there is nothing that can happen. And you are strong enough to weather anything that's coming down. And believe me, there's a lot of stuff coming down. We haven't even scratched the surface of it yet. I mean, it's heading our way, and we created it. We created the play that's about to play out now.
Well, can I ask you a question? Are you in connection consciously with your higher self at this point?
Well, you know, are you talking about, I mean, my higher self, meaning my spirit guide, I know who that is. And in fact, I was having some fun with it yesterday with somebody. I was talking about, I had this magic eight ball on the desk here, and I was asking it questions because I found out that my mother could manipulate that because I was playing with it one day. It had been sitting here, and for some reason I thought, you know what, they manipulate certain things, and I wonder if she, and I flipped it over, and I asked it a series of questions, and just everything was turning the way it's, you know, the answers were just blowing me away.
Right.
So I was having fun with it. And one of the questions I asked was if L.W. Rogers is still with me, and it was a definite yes. I mean, a huge yes.
Okay.
And I mean, I always know. I can feel that spirit around me. He's incredible spirit, and I write about him in my book, who he was, how I got to know who he was. And I mean, it's somebody I pulled off of a bookshelf, for God's sake. You know, it's not, I mean, I can't make this stuff up. When you read the story and see how it's connected to me, and the chances and are a zillion to one that anybody could just accidentally do this. It's a script we wrote out.
You know, there is no accidentally. I mean, your whole show, I just want to bring it up to the Key of Life. What is it? Thekeyoflife.net is your homepage. Key of Life Metaphysical Investigation is the book. The book reads real beautifully. Highly recommend the book. It just shows you. I mean, but I'm telling you, Randy, you have grown in your awareness. It's like, I mean, because now, like you even said, it's not so much that you came on the show to talk about the book. You're coming on the show now. I mean, you're the bridge.
Yeah.
You're becoming the spirit guide, so to speak, for the people.
Yeah.
You know, you're becoming what the acupuncturist did for you, which is like,
oh, definitely. That's what I'm trying to let flow through me. When it's coming straight from me, I'm still trying to play that newsman part of it, of imparting this information to you in the best way I know how, in real stories that you can find the truth in. You can find the truth in these stories.
Yeah.
I mean, the stories you can ask my brothers, you can ask my sisters. They were there when these things happened. You can ask my brother Tom. I always want to tell the truth of the story. It does no good to me to tell a story that's fictional because that I want something that I personally have the knowledge of and I can back it up with other stories. I'm working right now. I mean, I'm working on several levels of how these events and things in your life affect you and these regression sessions and what you pull over from another side. And I have another really, really cool story about a kid that's on my street. And I'm not going to use his name again just so it's not out there.
Absolutely.
But everybody knows who he is because he's on our street and he has a brain tumor. And every year they do a walk for him, and this walk is to raise money for this neurofibromatosis, which is what he has. And he's had it since he was born. It's in, gone into his brain and pressing on his brain, on his optical nerve, and literally he's legally blind. I mean, he has to pull an article up to within an inch of his glasses to read it. And he's, I mean, the cutest kid. He's 13 years old, and just, I love this kid. And I knew that some point in my life I'd be able to help him in some way.
Wow.
And I had no knowledge of this at the beginning of the year, how it would happen. But this spring they had the annual run for him, and go out and they raise money, and I donate their money, and it goes to this thing. But nothing ever gets done. Nothing happens.
Right.
You know? Sure, they're spending it in research, but they're not finding the cure for it. That's because I realized at this point now, after having done the regressions, that the cure is within him himself. So I talked to his mother, and I said, look, you know, I'm doing some things differently here. I wondered if you could bring him down. We could do a regression, maybe get to the bottom of why he has this tumor, because he brought it into his life for a reason. And I said, it may involve all of you, your entire family, because it impacts all of you. You all are involved in it. You have to roll your life around him now. And there's some, you all have reincarnated together. Whether you want to find out to be the truth or not, I know it to be the truth. And I can show Zachy how it's the truth, you know. So I take him under. And he comes down here, and we go under. He's all excited about finding a past life. And he gets back in his past life and starts describing being an artist. He's saying he has this paint jacket on and all this paint in it and on him. And he starts talking about these paintings and how beautiful they are. And I said, well, what kind of paintings are they? And he goes, well, they look like Van Gogh's. And I said, well, what's your name?
Oh,
He said Van Gogh's. And I said, well, what's your name? And he told me a name, and I couldn't catch it. He said it so softly, but I had it recording, and I didn't want to move him out of the motion where he was. And I thought, I'll go back to it later. So I continued on with the story. And he starts telling me about going from one art gallery opening to another with these paintings and how proud he is of them, and he's trying to sell these paintings and show them to the world.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden he gets into describing this argument with another artist that escalates into some kind of a fight, and then as a result, he tells me, the artist dies because of that fight, he said, because of this argument, this artist dies. And then a little while later, this kid dies in his past life. The character that he played back then dies, and now he finds himself on the other side, right? So I take him to higher self. I immediately get him to his spirit guides, who end up being his grandfathers from both his mother and father's side of the family right now. They're both passed on, and they show up there and start talking to this kid. And they start telling him, look, you've dragged this over. You've taken on this responsibility of this other artist. You feel guilty for him dying, and that's manifested itself as this brain tumor spreading into your brain, and because you've got this guilt, and this, you're judging yourself to be, you know, that you could have done something, and you've got to let go of that. You've got to let go of this, you know, karma that you've brought in, that you have to, you know, that you've got this guilt complex going.
Okay.
So this gets really, really wild. He says the grandparents start telling him, the two grandfathers start telling him how he can visualize, like a Pac-Man going through his brain, just eating away at this, and it will just dissolve it all, and it will all just go away. You can make it go away. Let go of you have nothing to do with this, let go of it. So I completely, while he's under hypnosis, give him more feedback, more visualization on how he can make it go away and everything. I bring him back out of the session. And he's sitting there. As soon as he comes out of the session, he starts laughing. And I made that up. I totally made this story up. And I'm laughing. I said, oh, I know you think you made it up. I said, you did make it up. I said, but what you made it up from is what's important. You made it up from your subconscious memories. I said, you were under hypnosis. I saw you were under hypnosis. I know you were under hypnosis. And I said, you were deep there, and you could only pull this information from your subconscious mind. And that's why it feels like it's made up to you, because you have no waking knowledge of this right now.
Right, right.
But when you're under, you do. You can pull it. And everyone has that box down there where it's all stored away, and it's affecting your life, and you don't know it. And I said, besides that, I said you even told me your name. I said, what did you say your name was when you were down there? He said, well, I said my name was Theo. And he said, Theo. And I said, that's a different kind of name. I said, now why would you name, he said, and his mom immediately chimed in. She says, oh, don't you have a friend named Theo? And he goes, and the kid says, yeah, I do. And mom says, well, I'm sure you brought that in because you had this friend named Theo and you thought of him and that became your name. And I said, no. I said, no, you have a friend named Theo to remind you of who you played once in another life. I said, that's why you have a friend named Theo. I said, don't you have friends named Bill and George and Tom and some normal names, just regular names? He goes, yeah. I said, well, why didn't you pull one of them? I said, you pulled the name Theo, and that friend of yours is named Theo to remind you of who you played. It's a marker in your life. I said, this is not a made-up story. This is a story that you have control over. And I said, and now you can let go of it. I said, you can understand that this argument that took place and this fight and this death of this other artist, just let go of that. And I said, you had nothing to do with it, and you're going to see your tumor disappear. It's going to start to shrink and go away on its own. I said, and you're going to do it. So they leave. I come upstairs to my office, sit down, and I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking, well, I got to call up my girlfriend, Michelle, and she's an art major and art director, and I thought, I got to tell her the story about this kid and this art thing. And so I tell her about the kid down the street, and I said, you're not going to believe what he said, that his paintings, the paintings that he had there looked like Van Gogh's, but he told me his name was Theo. And Michelle says, well, that's Theo Van Gogh. That's Vincent Van Gogh's brother. And I said, are you friggin' kidding me? I said, there's a guy named Theo Van Gogh. I said, I never heard of this. I said, she goes, well, you didn't study art. I said, I only ever heard of Vincent Van Gogh. She goes, he had a brother named Theo? I said,
and what
said,
happened
yeah.
to Theo?
Well, wait till you hear. Wait till you hear the story. Because I completely just come, I mean, I about come out of my chair. I'm like, are you friggin' kidding me? He was actually a Van Gogh. And he was going around all these art galleries with these paintings in this regression. And she said, yeah, well, that's what Theo did. Theo was the reason Van Gogh was a big success was Theo went around, he was an art dealer, went around showing all of Van Gogh's paintings, and he, after he died, turned him into the rock star of painters that he was. And even while he was alive, they wrote hundreds of letters to each other, and they were so close, they were literally inseparable. And what happened was, there was a fight between two artists, but it wasn't between him and Van Gogh. It wasn't between this kid, you know, Theo and Vincent. It was a fight between Gauguin and Van Gogh. And everyone knows what happens as a result of that fight. Vincent Van Gogh cut off his ear that night. Whether he cut it off himself, which is the way the story goes, and mailed it to a prostitute, or Gauguin had something to do with it coming off, we're not quite sure because there's camps out there that say, hey, something else might have happened. But whatever reason, Van Gogh's ear got cut off. He went into a complete depression. But he painted some of his best paintings after that for the next year and a half or two. I don't know how long he lived after that. Not long.
Right,
it wasn't long.
Right.
But he walked out in the field one day, pulled out a gun, and shot himself. And then he got home and collapsed and died. And 6 months later, Theo died. He was so despondent over his brother's death that he passed quickly after him. Now he's reincarnated as this young boy on my street. And you know what that kid does all day in his room? Sits there and paints. His mom tells me, I can't. He can't do anything else on his own. Everything else we have to help him with, except for painting. He's wanted paint since he was little, and that's all he does is sit there and paint. So I immediately call up his mother, and I get her on the phone. I start, did you know anything about Van Gogh's? No. I said, do you know that Vincent Van Gogh had a brother named Theo? No. I said, what do you think now? I said, I put the kid back on the phone. I said, I want to talk to him and find out what he knows. And I said, you know, what do you know about the Van Gogh's? Well, you know, he knew certain paintings. He started telling me about Starry Night and all that. I said, well, what do you know personally about him? Do you know about his mom or dad or who they – no. Did you know if he had any brothers or sisters? No, he didn't know any of that. I said, well, that's – you know, that's the kid now talking. Under hypnosis, he was Theo Van Gogh. And now, the best part, that happens in the spring, right, in June before I leave. I get back into Pennsylvania. I get an email from his mother in July. They just came back. Got the test back from the latest scan, his tumor is shrinking. For the first time ever, the tumor was going backwards. And then, again, a couple week, a week or two ago, I saw her out in the street. They just did another scan. It's continuing to go down. It's staying down. And I said, I need you to bring them back in. I really, we got to go more into this. You got to get in and really make sure that every part and aspect of this is covered. And he completely understands to let go of all this stuff, because it's a subconscious thing that he has no knowledge of. But once you bring it to the surface, you can release it.
Wow. Randy, that's outstanding.
Yeah. These stories are, it's not just this one. It's countless. It's everyone's story in everyone's life out there. It's going on in your life. It's going on in mine. Everything
I know, because, I'll be honest with you. I'm thinking that I'm going to have to, I got to plan it so I can, we're going to get you down here. I'll talk with you, and we'll see about, you know, you doing a group session, whatever,
sure.
In Connecticut.
Well, now, where are you in Connecticut?
I'm in Norwalk, which is, do you know Fairfield County? I mean,
I know Connecticut. I used to come back there all the time. In fact, I'm going to do another tour back there. We're going to set up a bigger one, and this time, I was back there, and I just kind of was rushed this time because of everything going on with my mom. Otherwise, I would have been trying to get more calls off. But
right.
Now that I've
got
one,
understood. Of
I'm going to do a
of
bigger
course.
One. We'll set up workshops. I'll get back there, and we'll do a personal session with you. And but
no,
I'm
absolutely,
on top of it,
I'm in. But I'm not workshop. Only in. I just spoke to a woman 2 days ago from Facebook. Believe it or not, we had exchanged numbers, but we just decided to speak, and she basically said, she goes, you know, are you getting out in the public? And I'm like, you know, I go, I got the show, I got Facebook, but I haven't found anything yet. And she's like, we need to plan something. And she just started going into her thing, but I'm going to ask her, she might even be listening, I don't know, if she wants to, you know, listen to the show and help me, you know.
Right. Well, there's a spiritual center somewhere near
before.
You, you know. And what you got to do is find one of these Reiki centers or something like that. And they'll
Unity
event.
Church.
They'll immediately,
I mean,
the minute you
places.
Come in.
Yes. No.
There are a lot of people out there doing this work. I mean, I'm not the, you know, there's Brian Weiss who wrote the book, Many Lives,
Many Masters.
And that
broke
it open. They're one of the ones. But Dick Sutphin's been doing it since the 70s. He has 20 books out on the subject. The most incredible, I mean, if I had a guru, I guess I would call him my guru of teaching me this skill and this understanding of how to use this to help someone. And it's just never ending what you're going to learn from it and how it's going to impact someone's life.
Agreed. But I'll be honest with you, Randy. One of the things that I know just from my own journey of within, your confidence will instill, it's like when people are in your field, they will have the confidence. Just like when the little boy said, I'm making this up, and you're like, yeah, I know you think that, but you're not.
Yeah.
That's the kind of confidence that people, they will get the healing from.
Right.
It is because there really is a difference between I'm trying and I know.
Yeah.
Trying is the doing of trying. It's not the doing of knowing.
Yeah. No, this kid is, every time I talk to him, I'm making it go away. I said, I know you are. I know you are. And you are going to do it. I said, you made it come in, and you're going to make it go away. And I don't care what they put in you, and I hate the chemo and all that stuff, and I'm not telling you to quit it. Just, you know, your parents are going to do what they're going to do, but you are the one that's going to make this go away, and you will. You brought it here, and you'll release it as well. And this has gone on in everyone's life. I don't care what it is happening with you. There's something you brought in to experience this, because everything that occurs in your life, again, is karma, lessening karma that you're out there, that you put on, that you knew you'd handle it, and you want to see how you'll react to it.
Right.
And I'll tell you, when you start to react in the way that I'm talking about now, when you start to accept it, release it, let it go, you grow exponentially, spiritually. You just start to vibrate at another level. And that's what we're talking about now, moving up into this 2012 scenario that's coming along. We want to move our vibration to this next level.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like a slingshot. The minute you become aware, it just blinks. You know, it's like you shoot, because it's the lack of belief is like this resistance keeping us, you know, stuck in the third dimension. When
the
universe, you know, the cosmos wants this to happen. It's happening around us. happening.
You know what you're talking about right now. That one word. I want to cue back in on that. Key in on that word, belief. Because you said the lack of belief. That's a word I've dropped from my language. I don't like to use it. I don't.
Okay.
And people would ask me, did you believe in reincarnation when you started? I said, I had no beliefs. I left those with my Catholic upbringing way long time ago. I only looked for the truth. As a newsman, that's what was embedded in me, search for the truth. And that's what really everyone else out there, that's why I tell everybody, look at your own life, look at the details of your own life. If it's the truth, hang on to it. If it's not, let it go. And then all you have left are truths. You don't want to have beliefs. The word belief itself is no good. It means you have to take something at face value with no knowledge of it being the truth. You have no knowledge of it being – that's what the church does to you. They tell you, you have to believe this. If you want to be a good Catholic, you have to believe this. I have nothing against the Catholics. I was one myself, but I've moved beyond that. At a point, it doesn't work in your life. If you don't have the truth, it won't work. You can have as many beliefs as you want, but unless it's the truth, it won't work in your life. At some point, it will quit working, and you'll start searching again for the real answer. It's like they said, the truth is out there, you know. I mean, they used that in there.
Yeah.
That's what's key here, is searching for the truth.
Yeah, this is powerful stuff. Randy, this is I'm telling you, I'm stoked. I'll help promote this.
And it has nothing to do with religion. You can,
that's
in a religion if
all.
You want. Right. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't. It has to do with looking inside yourself.
Yeah.
It really does. Everything, every answer is there, and you have it there. And through hypnosis, I can help you to bring it out. But you can do it on your own. You know, did you know that? That's another key part of this here is whenever I do hypnosis, the first thing I tell them after we start to do this, I said, I want you to understand, too, that when I'm not hypnotizing you. You are hypnotizing yourself. You are doing this to yourself. All I'm doing is helping you to get there. I'm talking to you. I'm telling you how to breathe. I'm telling you what to listen to, but you are doing it. I'm not doing anything. I didn't put you. And it's everybody has a misconception of what hypnosis is. It's really a powerful tool, and it's relaxation, and that's all it is. You're fully aware of what's going on, and once you tap into that source of that subconscious level of your mind, that's where everything resides.
Yeah, totally. Totally. You know, I was trained in hypnosis, right? I don't know, even know if you know that.
No. Really? Yeah.
Well, I was trained because after my mother died, everything to me was about consciousness because my mother came to visit me, except I only kind of felt her in my dreams.
Uh-huh.
I would go lucid because when she came to see me, I mean, it was like 3 weeks after she died, so I was so conscious that, okay, if you're here, this has to be a dream because you're dead. You know, like at this point, I don't even go lucid. I mean, she comes to me in my dreams, but she has come to me in meditations and stuff. And I started understanding that there is a level of consciousness that if I can be in that level, I'm resonating with her non-physicalness.
Right.
And so I could connect with her. And the first thing I said was, well, I need to learn about hypnosis. Also, hypnosis was how I healed. I did hypnotherapy for about 2 years for all, you know, I went through a bunch of crap when I was a kid, you know, molestations and all that good stuff. And the hypnosis was just, it affected my life so much deeper as a client than just talking about it to a therapist. Talking took me only so far, and I was like, you know, the truth is I'm still a mental case in relationships. I need to get healthy. And the hypnosis from the perspective of this lifetime flipped everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it just flipped everything. You know, everything that was I felt fearful about, I became divine and in a godlike sense of, like you're saying, this was all planned. This is all divine. I'm not a victim here. I'm playing a part in the show. I mean, your clarity is just exquisite. But so I totally understand all of this, and it's, I don't know, this is just wild.
The hypnosis part of it is, you know, It's just like I said, it's a tool to get you there. The acupuncture worked for me. I mean, it worked beautifully
right.
for me. When you read the book, I mean, I just put
yep.
them in and I
yep.
was relaxed. I like the hypnosis now because it doesn't involve having to go through years of learning how to do acupuncture, because I seriously thought, well, I'm going to have to go and do this with the way I learned how it happened to me. But then when I found Dick Sutphin, it was just, wow, this guy's too cool. I mean, he is the best hypnotherapist I have ever met. You know, I mean, the guy, he put me under, used me as an example in the classroom, and what came out in that class was just blew everyone away that day. And just wild stories. I'm going to have to put them up on my Facebook site sometime. And I'm going to try to translate the audio over, because I don't care. I mean, I'll put my own sessions up. I'm not,
yeah,
you know, my
exactly.
life.
That's what I do
if
on
you
the
read
air.
My book,
exactly.
my life is an open book. And that's why I'm about the truth. Everybody's like, aren't you afraid of what they'll judge? I said, first of all, I keep telling you, don't judge anybody. If somebody's going to judge me, that's their problem. I don't care
yeah.
what anyone thinks about me. I really don't. I said, because I'm here playing the role I'm supposed to, and if they can't see that for the truth that it is in the book, that, you know, then that's their
problem.
Then
it doesn't
it's
matter.
Right. It doesn't really matter, you know, because I didn't paint myself with any kind of brush in that story that I'm this kind of great guy that just everything was going perfect in my life. I laid out everything that was happening. And
yeah.
how it, but there was a reason it happened, to tear me away from these preordained things that I had embedded into my life of, you know, while the church really had laid it into me that, you know, you had to live this life this certain way. And then once I let go of that, it was so
right.
freeing to really realize, you know, there's other
what,
things out there, other explanations.
Where your life
can
really go. Yeah,
yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah, so.
Listen,
but
we
anyway,
are pretty much we're out of time.
I know we're out
you're
of time. Yeah.
Fantastic. You're
hook up with
I
me
so
on Facebook.
I will contact you on Facebook. I'm going to work on getting it. So I definitely want a session, but I'll be honest with you, I'm going to work on seeing what I can do to arrange. You know, let's get 35, 40 people in a room and see what, you know, let's play. And the best part is all I have to do is say, listen, just listen to the show.
Right.
Because read the book, listen to the show. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and change your life, because
right.
everybody's got something they want to change. Everybody, or something they want to investigate. Mm-hmm. You know, just something within themselves. I'll be in touch.
All right,
you're
Goldie,
fantastic.
Well, it was fun talking with you again. Thank you for having me.
Randy, you're outstanding. Thank you,
right.
thank you, thank you. Have an
you're
amazing
welcome.
Night.
All right.
All right. I will
uh-huh.
talk to everybody next week. Have a great week. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.